is aggressive. I think that we were indicating that we may start the meeting, and I referred you to the minutes of the previous meeting. May I just quickly say that all of you are welcome, honorable members and our support staff and everybody. Let's get to the matter that Honorable Meneer is talking about whilst we are waiting for the presenter.
Thank you, Chair. I will be as brief as possible. We have raised some of these, we have traversed some of these issues before. But I draw members' attention, obviously, to the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, which is, as all members know, the act which sets out the procedure by which the budget should be adopted by Parliament. And if we look at Section 9 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, Section 9 says that the Appropriations Committee can only begin work on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill after the fiscal framework has been adopted. Members will be aware that the Finance Committee and indeed this committee are still busy considering the fiscal framework, and the fiscal framework has not been adopted. So we would argue that this meeting is not consistent with national legislation and with the Constitution because in the first instance the fiscal framework has not been adopted. Even if one doesn't accept the argument, the fact is that the Division of Revenue Bill, which is the subject of today's meeting, hasn't been referred to the Appropriations Committee. So the committee is meeting to consider a bill which hasn't been referred to this committee, and on that basis we would argue that these proceedings are not consistent with the Constitution and not consistent with national legislation. If, Chair, you want to argue that in fact these proceedings are taking place in terms of Joint Rule 159 and that what is being considered here is not the bill, which you concede has not been referred to this committee, but indeed a draft bill. Well, that cannot be true because, as far as we are aware, no draft bill has been referred to this committee. Only a bill has been tabled in Parliament. So there is no draft bill in the first instance. And if one looks at the program, it indicates that what the committee's business today is not to focus on a draft Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, but to in fact focus on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. If one looks at the meetings of committee, it indicates that the business of this committee is to consider the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, not the draft Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. And the reason for that is plain, Chair. There, in fact, is no draft Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. There is only a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. And if this committee proceeds to consider the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, then the proceedings, in our view, would be inconsistent with the Constitution and with national legislation. And thirdly, Chair, even if you argue that this committee are meeting on some other unspecified rule, it raises the question, what is the point of these meetings? Because once the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill is formally referred to this committee, as it will be when the fiscal framework is adopted, then the entire process of National Treasury briefings and public submissions and public meetings by SOLGA and other interested parties will have to be repeated. So I would argue that if this committee are proceeding under some other unspecified rule, at best it will be not only inconsistent with the Constitution and inconsistent with national legislation, but it will simply be inefficient and wasteful expenditure. So I would urge the committee to reconsider its program, Chair, and to begin work as it's required to do in terms of the Constitution and the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Act when the bill has been formally referred to this committee. We cannot, as Parliament, sit back and allow ourselves to rubber stamp a 1.4 trillion rand budget. That is what's happened in the past, and I'm determined, Chair, not to allow that to happen again. And I don't want this committee or Parliament to underestimate my resolve. We haven't made a final decision, but one of the action steps which we may consider is going to court to interdict the budget process if we continue like this. We haven't made a final decision, but do not underestimate my resolve. Thank you.
Before that, Honourable Sik, you want to add to what Honourable Menu has said?
Chair, thank you. I would like to add, what is also disappointing, Chair, is that no action has been taken since our last meeting where we raised the exact points that we are raising again. So it's clear that we are not serious about ensuring that we fulfill our responsibilities in a lawful manner, because clearly, as I indicated at the last meeting, that we need to ensure that we do things in a lawful manner. We do have legislation to ensure that this is done. So it's, as I said, disappointing that nothing has been done. We would not like to be part of this procedure, which we feel it's unnecessary that we are actually hurrying formalities here, because in terms of time frames, we do have time. My last recollection of the time that we have for the fiscal framework is the 17th of March for that to be passed, and then for the Division of Revenue Bill, we have until the 12th of May, and then the Appropriations Bill the 1st of August. So it's questionable, and it's, you know, as to why we actually want to rush this the bill, which in the last medium-term budget policy statement, we did exactly the same thing. And that time we raised our concern, and we're raising it again. So it's just a concern that we are wanting to do things this way, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. You know, when times are bad, in any democracy, decision makers do things differently. We are not going to sit here and just listen to repeated and repeated intimidation of this committee. We are not going to be intimidated. We are members of Parliament. We have got the right, according to the Constitution, to call anybody to come and talk to us. We want to understand things thoroughly, because we are dealing with a different situation in the country and in the world as far as economic growth is concerned. And I really hope and pray that in the future we will have in this country an official opposition that will put the interests of the country first, and not a politicking for local government. Thank you.
Honourable Majopa.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Greetings to colleagues. No, I think, Honourable Chair, you know, one is disappointed to hear from the opposition party to say that what a rush, when we want an information. And as my colleague, Honourable Shopestone, is saying, as a committee, we have got a right to call any people that we think will assist us as a committee to take an informed decision when time comes. And I don't think the Constitution is prohibiting us to gather the information. Commission so that when the time to deal with the issue, the issues on hand, we are in a position to take an informed decision. My disappointment is on the fact that we had a strategic meeting as a standing committee on appropriations towards the end of last year. When we went on a strategic meeting, one of the things that we raised, we said we always get information on the last minute, and it doesn't enable us to thoroughly look at the matter and take an informed decision. But surprisingly today, to hear our members, especially in our standing committee, saying we have got enough time, it's a contradiction of the highest order, because our outcry, all of us, was to say that we don't get information on time. And I don't think, because they're not going to take a decision, we want to hear the views of the people. We are here because the people have sent us here. If now there is a matter on the table and we want to get information prior to us taking a decision, I think it's within our rights to say that as a committee, because we have been trying to say that now they give us this information budget. The issue that was on hand on our strategic, we're talking about the issue of budget, to say that we are being pushed to take a decision now, without getting an information on time. This one, it allows us to prepare us so that when we take a decision, we take an informed decision. And I don't know why the colleagues are refusing us to get an information, because we always fighting, we have been fighting government to say, you know, this access to information. Now we want access to information so that when time comes, we deliberate on the matter and we take an informed decision. We appeal to our colleagues that let us listen to this presentation, gather the information. We are not going to take any decision. We want to get the clarity so that when we really take a decision, we are clarified in our minds to say that we can take this direction. Thank you.
Honorable Law.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what is happening here, Honorable Chair, is in terms of how we receive the agenda. I think none of us wants to sit in committees that is unlawful, that is not doing things according to the rules, point of number one. So I think when agendas are being sent out, let's make it clear on agendas, it's only for information purposes, not to adopt certain things that we shouldn't adopt according to the rules. So what I want to refer back, and I think there is where some of my colleagues are struggling, because most of us, we don't want to be involved in unlawful committees that have happened in the past in Parliament history. Rule 203L, Functions and Powers of the Standing Committee of Appropriation, number one, is clear there, the functions of the Appropriations Committee. So if we are saying here, we are setting here for information purposes, let it be, and let it be so transferred on agendas and information that we are receiving to and invitations to a particular meeting. Then my second point, Chair, yes, it's for information purposes, but why did we receive the presentation of SALGA only this morning? 45 minutes before a meeting, we received a presentation of SALGA. Where's the seriousness in that? Now we are coming here, rush to a meeting, we must now debate and deliberate on a presentation that we have received 45 minutes before a meeting. That can't be allowed. And then secondly, then the person of SALGA, yes, you have said he is rolled up at the visitor center. But if you know you are coming to a meeting, your meeting is starting at 9:30, you will make prior arrangements. We can't be taken for granted as members of parliament in that regard. And then the person is coming and telling us he's rolled up at the visitor center. We have also other things to arrange. We have also many meetings to attend. And yet we came on time for this meeting. But other people, even the members of AMC, they came late in this meeting. We were on time. Now we are saying they are asking arguing regarding what is the information session and all of those things. Let it be corrected on the agenda in the invitation that is the information session. Then we won't have a problem with it. But if you are saying this is what you are coming to do on your agenda, and it's not transferred and related to the rules of Parliament, it's where we're going to receive problems, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Sheikh Imam, you want to have a take before
Yes, thank you, Chair.
To be near and Honourable Shoppers Son.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure where the confusion comes from. I'm not sure that we need to say everything on this agenda. It is quite clear, even yesterday's session, that we were very informed. I've learned a hell of a lot yesterday. And that prepares you even better for the questions that you may have. And this is what the exercise is. You know, if we follow our sessions that we've been having over a period of time, a lot of these sessions that we have is what guides us and educates us. Because we come from backgrounds that we don't know too much about what is going on. So I don't know what the confusion. I don't really personally believe it must be on the agenda that it is just going to be for information purposes. We are a committee, we are a mature committee, we know what we're doing, we know and understand what it is. It says very, very clearly. And at the end of the day, the information that we are going to get, there's no decision going to be taken. You cannot take any decisions. All they are doing is giving us their perspective from the local government sector, like financial and fiscal did yesterday, and the PBO did yesterday. So I don't see what the challenge is. The other thing is that these things were emailed to us, I think, earlier on, although it was only emailed today. But it was emailed to us earlier on today. I must admit that, yes, we do have challenges in terms of time. That's why I am late, because I have lots of other things to do as well. But, Chair, I personally believe these sessions that we have are very, very important to us. And I don't think we should be wasting time on deliberating on whether it should take place or should not take place. Because we want to be educated so that we can go informed to know what to do and the further steps to take. Thank you, Chair.
Members, you know, I don't want us to rehash a debate we had on Friday. Honestly, to sit here and waste Parliament's time instead of doing work is quite unbecoming of members. I must warn you that we can't rehash last Friday's debate and delay the work that we should do. So, make your input, and this is the last round of input. Honourable Mani.
Chair, I agree with you. I mean, there's clearly a disagreement here. I don't want to rehash the arguments. This will have to be settled either at a higher level or outside Parliament. But let me say, it's not us that are wasting this committee's time. It's you that are wasting this committee's time, because this entire process, the National Treasury briefing, public submissions, briefing by Solga, will have to be repeated when the Division of Revenue Bill is formally referred to this committee. So, Chair, it is you who are wasting this committee's time, because this entire process is going to have to be repeated at considerable expense to the executive and to interested parties who at some point in the future will have an interest in making public submissions. I'm quite happy to leave it at that, and as we said before, we are not prepared to take part in proceedings which we believe are not consistent with the Constitution and not consistent with national legislation.
Emma, you know why I can't rehash the debate we had last Friday? It's because we received legal advice. And legal advice said the committee was absolutely correct in receiving information from stakeholders. Honorable Law, we're just getting briefed so that we are, when we go through this procedural processes, we are better informed, we better understand this bill that is before us. We're not taking any decisions. We're not writing any report. The report will come after we have formally said, considered the inputs of stakeholders. We still would like to hold public hearings we haven't up to this far received as much as we would like to. I'm informed that we have submissions from VAT, we have information from the Equal Education so far. And if those we have already received briefings from would like to formally participate in the formal public hearings where we hold the public hearings, they will not be back from doing so again. So there is no decision that we are taking. We're simply getting briefings from the stakeholders for us to be informed. And in terms of the rules of Parliament, any committee is allowed to engage with stakeholders on any issue at hand so that it can better inform itself, leading to formally taking on the issue in terms of procedure. So, and that's why I'm saying let's not rehash Love Friday. It's not going to take us anywhere. And there are no decisions that are going to be taken here. We're just receiving a briefing. We'll ask questions of clarity where we are not clear what SALCA wants to say, in the same manner we did yesterday with the FFC and PPO, in the same manner we did with National Treasury on Friday. There were no decisions taken. Now, let me alert you that this bill is on the ATC already. And we are aware that we are not going to take any decisions upon it until the revenue bill is passed. We are aware of that. We are not breaking any rules. We are simply being proactive, getting clarity for ourselves from stakeholders who we think might add value to what we would like to do as we get into the procedural processes of adopting the bill. Honourable Shopestall and Honourable Mandor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just pleading with you, Chairperson, that every time we hold our meetings, let's have the state law advisor with us. Because I am afraid we are getting advice from a person who is not a law specialist. Two times, Honorable Manir advised us, and the state law advisor differed with him. And number two is that when we went for the strategic meeting, Honorable Manir is not there. We go with the two members of the DA. We reach a decision, we agree how we are going to deal with things. And then, when we are about to deal with things the way we have agreed, there comes a shadow minister. You know these ministers who come to disturb the parliament. I don't know whether we should actually not allow these ministers to come and interfere with the duties of the legislature. We have got the right, according to the Constitution, to actually call anybody to come and advise us. So please don't mislead us. And if these things were raised at the strategic meeting, which we held for 5 days, I would understand. And I don't understand whether Honorable Manir has got the right to come and disrupt our committee, because he's not a member of this committee. I have not been informed that now he is part of this committee. Is not going to be intimidated by outsiders, Honorable Manir. You are not part of this committee. We have made our decisions. You cannot come and undermine the decisions of the meeting we held for 5 days at the expense of the taxpayer. And then you just come with your advices, which have been proven to be wrong on two occasions by people who have been to school on legal issues. Thank you.
Honorable Madoba?
No, thank you.
Let me just say that any member is allowed to participate, the Honorable Member of Parliament is allowed into the meeting of committee. they are not to disrupt, to help proceed with the process. Honorable Madoba.
Thank you very much, Chair. The shadow minister here is disturbing me. No, Honorable Chair, I think we need to continue with our meeting. We accept what my colleague, Honorable Law, has said, to say that on the invitation, it must be clear when we are invited. And I think it was clear. There was nothing that said we are going to adopt or consider according to the invitation. They said they are just coming to comment, which means to say they will do presentation and comment on what is in there. So that, as the Chair has correctly indicated, when we take a decision, we take an informed decision. I think what the Honorable Law was raising is correct to say that if it is clear that it's coming on the invitation, and I think it was clear. And also to say that, to clarify to the colleague that said we're late, we're not late, we came earlier than her, but because my colleague was not well, we took her to the clinic, so we were not late. And the Chair was reporting when I came back. So we're really not late. We are always on time because we take serious our work. So I wanted to clarify to the colleague that. And also to continue, Chair, you have covered me because there was a legal advice on this meeting that we are holding. And also I'm not sure whether the Shadow Minister is just putting a vote of no confidence to their members that they sent here, that they can't raise what their party wants to raise in the meeting. So he took it upon himself to come and raise it because it's a vote of no confidence to their members that they sent to the committee. And I think they have got no fear, the members that are sitting here. They always raise things deeper with us where it is necessary, where we agree, we agree. I've never seen them being scared to raise issues. And it's surprising to see that you send people, you try and trust them to deal with the work, and you put a vote of no confidence, and you come yourself, you become a bigger boss. And I think, yeah, it's true, Chair, that everybody is allowed, but not to disrupt our meeting, and make us not continue with our business. As I indicated before, we had a strategic meeting. We know what we want as this standing committee on appropriation. He was not part. Maybe if he wants to be part, he must take one of their members. It does not have a pass a vote of no confidence to them. I think we need to continue, Honorable Chair. Thanks. We respect the members of the HA that are always here because they raise issues, robust issues, deeper with us, but in the thing that makes sense, they agree with it. Thanks.
Honorable members, we will continue with this meeting. And those who do not want to participate in the meeting, let them leave. Simple as all that. We are not taking any further input. This meeting continues. Honorable Fip, what do you want to say, Honorable McLaughlin?
Just
allow you to talk.
Yeah, thank
because
you.
Because we are sitting members of this court.
Thank you. And it's always been that you say, so I'll be disappointed if you stifle my deliberation. But nevertheless, just my input regarding the differences made to the strategic plan. At no point in the strategic planning did we agree to do things that are unlawful. We agreed to do things right, and that's exactly what we want to do now. We want to make sure that we're doing things right. So the fact that people's time has been wasted, it's not because of our doing, it's because things are not being done right, and therefore we are asked to participate and to be involved, and we're not going to do that. It's as simple as that. I won't comment on what Honorable Madlopa said. I'll talk to her on my own about one-on-one about the comments that she's made. But nevertheless, with regards to this being just a briefing, it can't be just a briefing. It's in the ATC, it's in the Z list, it's a meeting. So it can't be just a briefing. It's part of the process to finalize the budget, etc. So that just being a briefing is untrue, it's inaccurate. The issue regarding the clarification, if it's just here to clarify, I can read, I promise you. So if there's anything in that bill that I need clarification on, then I will do that myself. I don't need other people to clarify a bill for me. Right? We ask you for input, which is part of the process in terms of the Money Bills Act, and that is what we're here for. We're not here, like the other member of the ANC the other day said, it's an informal gathering. I don't go to informal gatherings. I have other things to do. So if it's an informal gathering or a briefing, then I will not participate in that. I participate in what I'm here, sent here to do, and it's my work to ensure that things are done according to the law. Thank you, sir.
This committee can't sit in a meeting that is not in the records of Parliament. Simple as all that. Honourable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Chair. Most of what I was going to say has been covered by my colleagues. And with the greatest respect to my colleagues in this committee and yourself, to suggest that we're trying to be intimidating, I take offence to, these are not intimidatory tactics. We have a serious concern and we'd like to be addressed in a serious fashion in terms of those concerns that we have. And to suggest that this is an electioneering tactic, sorry, Chair, this is unbecoming of the members of this committee, and especially in view of the relationship we've had with each other up until now. As Honourable Figures said, we've never at any stage agreed to bypass the rules and the legislation that's in place and that governs the work we do. That is our main concern. It is my submission, Chair, that today we should be dealing with the fiscal framework, not with the Division of Revenue Bill, because we're still in that period from the tabling of the budget until we sign off on the fiscal framework. Once we've done that, then we can start to consider the Division of Revenue Bill. There's a process in place. It follows a sequence. We seem to be trying to do it all together. That is our concern, that the law doesn't provide for us to do it all simultaneously. The law provides for us to do it in the sequence as set out in the Money Bills Act. And as to the comments about a vote of no confidence in us, this committee forms part of the Department of Finance. So just as the Minister of Finance is the head of this committee, the Shadow Minister of Finance can also present himself at this meeting as and when he sees fit. It's in no way a vote of no confidence in the members. It's just to show how serious our concern is about the procedure that's been followed. Thank you, Chair.
The Minister is not the head of this committee. He accounts to this committee. Let me repeat. There is no way this committee is going to do illegal things. And we are not sitting in an illegal meeting. Because the rules of Parliament allows us to convene and deliberate on matters we think we need to deliberate on. It allows us to, and the Constitution allows us to call anyone, any stakeholder, so that we can engage in a meaningful discussion on pertinent issues that affect our nation, on issues that Parliament must eventually take decisions on in terms of existing procedures. When we get to the stage of following the procedures, we will do so. We have a program to do so. So there's nothing illegal about it. My challenge is that you are reading illegalities where they don't exist. So members, let's continue with this meeting. Let's get this briefing. We'll seek clarity on issues they are raising, which we think we need further clarity. Once more, no decisions are going to be taken, and the formal public hearings are still coming. Thank you, members. Let's go ahead. Salka, you are now here. Honourable McLaughlin, I see your hand.
Thank you, Chair. Would you just note the DA's objection to the process for the record and excuse us because we will be leaving the meeting now. Thank you.
Okay. We'll note your objection.
revenue bill and the budget as presented by the Minister of Finance. And we have obliged accordingly. Let me begin by apologizing for our late arrival and submission of these documents. It is not because we don't take the committee seriously, nor is it because we wanted to undermine the processes, you know, followed by the committee in considering matters of this kind. I must also apologize, Chair, that I'm here as an official from SALDA without the company of our Polkan leadership. They had committed to being part of this presentation when the date was initially set for the 4th. So when the meeting was moved forward, most of them found it, you know, a bit difficult because of the constraints in their various means causes. Having said that, my name is Simpiwe Dwengwa. I'm the Executive Director for Municipal Finance at SALDA, based at the head office. These are some of the issues that the presentation is going to be covering. Just a broad reflection on the budget, some of the challenges and opportunities that are there, as indicated by the Minister, the reforms relating to grants. But also, we want to highlight a couple of other issues that we wish the committee to consider as it does its oversight work. The bill was presented, Chair, against the backdrop of the challenging macroeconomic situation, declining, you know, GDP projection, and increasing pressure all around on state finances. And this kind of a scenario has implications for all of us, both in the immediate and intermediate, you know, term. The need, therefore, for the balancing of priorities while providing for funds to meet basic necessities implies that all of us in all the 3 years need to make some adjustments, better manage the limited resources that have been allocated to us, increase our accountability for those resources, but also find creative and innovative ways of delivering services to our various constituencies. SALDA, as it is often the case, we participated in the processes to craft the Division of Revenue Bill and the budget broadly. We participated at the 2 budget forums held in June and September that were convened by the Treasury, where matters relating to the allocation of resources to our CA were discussed. We also did participate in January when a special budget forum was convened to further present to various parties the latest, you know, fiscal outlook picture and proposals in terms of the allocation that were to be made. We had indicated to the committee previously that SALDA, alongside the SFC, COFDA, and National Treasury, does meet at a technical level to consider issues, making it therefore easy for us to understand what becomes the ultimate picture, you know, that is entered the Division of Revenue document, even if we don't always, you know, agree on issues in that kind of a platform. We do, though, want to acknowledge upfront that on a number of issues that we had previously raised as concerns to us, we are collectively moving towards some form of resolution, and there's work still being done, and we hope that in the near future some of those issues would be agreed upon, and whatever then is resolved would therefore be reflected in the figures of future budgets. The period that we are going to be getting into the next financial year is likely to entail more pressure on all of us. At a broad level, we all know about the drought situation, the tertiary education funding, funding of the new health reforms, and a couple of other issues. opposition to urban centers, demand for services, the inability of those who demand those services to pay for such, and the infrastructure implications for those, you know, who move to the cities. All these pressures taken together balance against the backdrop of declining revenues imply that all of us, therefore, will need to increasingly account about the effectiveness and the consequences of how we spend, you know, these resources. And that talks specifically to the oversight function of this committee and others. The allocation going to local government that are in the Division of Revenue Bill generally indicates a decline from what was initially presented in the medium-term budget policy statement. The transfer over the MTF period has been reduced to make some available share for the priorities that I've already alluded to. For instance, the projections that are there indicate a decline over the medium-term period by 0.6% year one, 1% year two, and 1.8% year three, translating to 300 million in 2016-17, 500 million 2017-2018, and 1 billion 2018-2019. And our interactions with the Treasury, you know, indicates that depending on how the economy improves, there could still be further decreases on what is being indicated. Now, within this context then of declining allocation to local government, SALGA has made an argument that the net effect of these decreasing allocations may have a serious bearing on small, poor, and rural municipalities than on the metro, because of the ability to collect their own revenue, but also how to manage, you know, those resources broadly. We raised that concern and argument, knowing fully that the current formula does, in a way, you know, prioritize and reinforces allocations towards poor and small municipalities, and that these small and poor municipalities are the ones who benefited actually in the allocation arising from the new formula. We are mindful and aware of the fact that the increases that were, you know, provided for in the 2015-16, you know, deal or DORA, you know, are not going to be sustainable going forward. But therefore, we note the fact that Treasury, you know, or the Division of Revenue Bill rather, guarantees at least 95% funding, you know, in terms of the allocations that were indicated, you know, previously. It could have been more, Chair, and we're happy that after discussion, you know, we all agreed that whatever excesses, you know, are envisaged, at least must be kept at that 95% level to mitigate negative, you know, results. As SALGA, in collaboration with the FFC, I hope they did allude to this when they presented last week, but also the minister did raise this point in his budget speech. You know, we conducted a study on the cost of providing a basket of services by municipalities. And what seems to be coming out of that study is that, for instance, the allocations made to municipalities seem to be lagging behind or are lower than what it actually costs to provide these services. For instance, on the issue of basic services, the cost of providing this amounts to about 6.8%, while the equitable share grows only at 4.6% for the coming financial year. That's an issue that is of concern to us, and it's an issue that we're hoping that as we discuss future allocations, you know, will be considered and factored into the allocations accordingly. The decision by NELSA yesterday, you know, to provide a 9%, the 9.2 increase, you know, for adjustment for electricity, also is an issue that is of concern, and we've raised that in in our submission for the near NASA hearing, and whether municipalities, you know, have budgeted for that, and then how they fund the shortfall is an issue that we're likely to raise with the Treasury in our future meetings. Wendy, I hope you're not in that. Good. Since the 2015, on the grant issue now, the allocation on conditional grants have been declining, reduced by 4.9 billion over the MGF period. And the grant review exercise that again we did, you know, between ourselves, Treasury and the FFC, has produced recommendations that talk to the merging of some of the grants, the discontinuation of some, but also it provides for new elements that were previously not catered for around the maintenance, refurbishment, and asset management, you know, within the grant framework. Some grants have been provided specifically for cities, you know, to get infrastructure within the metros and to facilitate economic development. We are happy with those, Chair, and we do support the overall trust of the grant, you know, our reform mechanism. We are worried, though, about the decline within the Municipal Facility Improvement Grant, which is being reduced from the previous or the current financial year from 251 million, you know, to only just 84 million in the next, you know, financial year. We thought, you know, as SALGA, that this is an important grant to support municipalities with their systems and infrastructure, but also with a number of other reforms that are necessary in that space. The fact that this grant has declined to that amount does raise some serious concerns, you know, about how municipalities will give effect to some of the reforms that are envisaged. For instance, whereas the previous Division of Revenue Act made a provision to fund the implementation of the Municipal Standard Charter of Accounts, you know, reforms, the current Division of Revenue Bill doesn't provide or is silent, you know, on that element. And it worries us, because without that financial support, some municipalities may not be in a position to implement those important reforms, which we had supported up front as well. We do note as well a couple of other, you know, items that are provided for in the bill. Topmost being the demarcation grant provided to support those municipalities that have been amalgamated by the demarcation board. We do know, though, that our calculations, you know, as far as, and having worked with some of the municipalities, you know, across the country, you know, seem to indicate that the amount being allocated falls far short than the projection that we had, you know, come up with between ourselves and the FFC. So how we monitor, you know, the work done to amalgamate those municipalities and that they are sufficiently funded is an issue that the committee may want to consider. You know, there's a provision being made of about 309 million for an extra share payment to all councillors who won't be returning after the local government elections, whether, you know, it's because of age or a number of other reasons. We are busy working with COGDA, you know, and Treasury to find a formula, you know, for the allocation, you know, of that amount, you know, to all those councillors. There is, again, a process, you know, to deal with unfunded and underfunded money, you know, that we had agreed upon, driven by COGDA, you know, to come up with an improved framework for the allocation of fiscal powers and functions to various municipalities. And we're hoping that through that, you know, initiative, that item of underfunded or unfunded money, you know, would be dealt with. It's an issue that we feel is urgent. We know that there's some draft, you know, documents having been produced by COGDA, but it's a matter that needs to be finalized as a matter of urgency so that going forward we deal with that, you know, item, which has been outstanding for the past, you know, number of years. The minister did raise an issue about cost containment measures, and as organized local government, we want to support, you know, that call. We raised our voice that there does need to be a the regulation, you know, to accompany the circular that should be going to municipalities indicating some of these, and as well that we would want to participate in the crafting of that circular so that it doesn't impose unimplementable, you know, requirements on municipalities or micromanage, you know, municipalities. But we are mindful as well of the fact that some of the circulars that are put around by Treasury do not have an effect, you know, technically, unless each municipality has adopted, you know, these. We've made a point that depending on how the circular looks like, and we may want to pass a resolution at our National Members' Assembly, which is in May, that the municipalities, if they have not as yet done so, must adopt those containment measures alongside the adoption of their budget. Part of the items that we wish the community could consider when interacting with Treasury and other parties, you know, around the instruments to generate revenue for local government. We have raised previously an issue around the Borrowing Act, which needs to be given an effect through various, you know, instruments. We have proposed previously the introduction of a local business tax to fund, you know, economic infrastructure in municipalities. We have raised an issue around the funding of municipal roads through a vehicle license fee. All those, you know, we would propose that the committee, you know, follows up on and assist us in making sure that there is an agreement and that they are implemented accordingly. We are also currently in a discussion, you know, with Treasury and other parties to explore alternative instruments for funding or for revenue, not only revenue raising, but also for different funding, you know, infrastructure in municipalities. We had a seminar about 3 weeks ago, with a number of other, you know, entities to discuss an instrument called pooled financing. And it's an item that we are following up between ourselves and Treasury, and there are measures already among some of the Gauteng municipalities to experiment around this, you know, model. We have raised an issue, Chair, which may have legal and legislative implications around the use of the equitable share, you know, as an instrument to leverage, you know, the borrowing capacity of municipalities. It's an issue that needs, you know, to be taken up, considered, and if there are to be those MFMA amendments, we look at that accordingly. The last item, Chair, that we want to flag, and it's an issue that was discussed and resolved upon at the last SALGA conference in 2011, that of the National Collections Agency. Currently, municipalities are owed about 115 billion. That's a huge amount if one were to imagine what that money could do, where it could go. We are worried that some or part of it, you know, could be debt that's not collectible. And the fact that it is sitting there on local government accounts, you know, creates all sorts of problems around their credit, you know, rating, you know, of municipalities. The establishment of a collections agency, similar to SAL, you know, or other models internationally, is one proposal that SALGA had put forward. Unfortunately, no work has been done to investigate this in detail and to make concrete, you know, proposals around it. It's an issue that we think, you know, is important going forward, must be looked at. Otherwise, the whole, you know, situation of municipalities being owed such huge amounts is just untenable. And then, lastly, we want to flag, you know, and raise an issue with the committee that Treasury, again, on a number of instances, has raised the issue of Section 216 relating to the withholding of the equitable share allocations to municipalities. We have been informed Chair, that another round of those Section 216 is likely to come up during this month of March, such that municipalities who still owe ESCOM and the Water Board may not have the allocation released. It's an issue that worries us, you know, as SALGA, because in a number of instances, we've met with these municipalities, we've met with Treasury, both nationally and in the provinces. We do know that there are municipalities, actually a large number of municipalities, have been paying the ESCOM accounts. We are concerned, though, that there's a group of about 27 municipalities that, for a number of reasons, have not been able to meet those obligations. And the invoking of Section 216, as far as we are concerned, doesn't in any way address the underlying causes of that kind of a situation. We have municipalities, for instance, Chair, that are billed, say, 5 million by ESCOM, you know, a month, when they actually collect only, you know, 1% of that amount. So if they were to pledge whatever they collect to ESCOM, still they wouldn't be able to meet their month-to-month obligation. But we've been working with all these municipalities to make sure that they sign agreements that are implementable, that they do pay, you know, ESCOM. We are worried that an equal attention has not been given to ESCOM, you know, to make sure that it cleans up its act, you know, around the issues that are listed there, that they bill only after 15 days, that if you don't pay on day 15, they charge you prime plus interest, that some of the debt, you know, indicated far exceed the capital amount that the thing initially billed, and that some of the debt, you know, date more than, you know, 3 years, and as far as we're concerned, we're supposed to prescribe, you know. So we're worried about all those things, and we're saying, yes, let's engage. We will support, you know, Treasury and Costa in making sure that municipalities, you know, stick to their part of the bargain, but also we want to see an equal emphasis, you know, on the side of ESCOM, that they must sign the service delivery agreement and clean up, you know, their business practices. Actually, those are some of the issues that we want to raise for today. We do think that the committee must closely monitor, you know, some of the issues that we've raised and work, you know, with all of us, you know, in making sure that we come from time to time and reflect or report on progress being made on the various issues that that we've indicated. That some of these issues would probably go to our members of family in May, and whatever then comes out of that, you know, session is what we may present at the next budget forum, which we hope in June or July. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, there you have it. Let's engage. Honorable Sheikh Imam, you are first. Honorable Lowe, you are second. Honorable Madofa, third. Honorable Manana, fourth. All right. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first of all welcome the presentation by Sheldon. Let me start off by my one major concern, and that is, might be my opinion, but I think it's an opinion of a lot of people, that local government tends to be failing us in terms of performing, in terms of service, in terms of implementing. I want you to tell us today, what is SALGA, what is your role in ensuring that local government performs, that they implement, that they follow upon the strategic plan, that they pay their debts on time, you know, that the grants are used accordingly, so that we don't have to create other grants because, you know, municipalities or local governments are not performing. I'd like you to tell us what is your role there. The other challenge that I have is, in terms of the writing off of debt by municipalities, what role do you play there? You know, is it just left to the municipalities to decide to write off debts and things? At the same time, I want to agree with you that there is a challenge with regards to the prescription period, which is 3 years. But there's also what I call the induplum law, where the capital amount, the interest and cost, cannot be more than the actual capital amount. So I think you've got a good argument in terms of ESCOM and the high amounts that they're asking for in terms of it. I'm also worried about you talking about, you know, business tax and vehicle licensing. There's already so much of a challenge that our motorists and our business people face today. Businesses are closing. If you go into the urban area, I can tell you that most of these businesses can't succeed today. Their profits are down. The high labor costs, you know, and the competition. Now to go and enforce a business tax on to these businesses is like basically eliminating them from the system. So for me, I'm a little bit worried. You're talking about the reduction in the equitable share. I want you to tell us, you know, what effect is this really going to have on our local government in terms of that. You know, I want to talk specifically about the I don't know if you know, there was a constitutional court ruling recently, and in that constitutional court ruling, I think it appears now that even the prescription period may fall off because the debt is owed by the property and will continue to accrue. And whether it will be for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, you're still going to be liable to pay the debt. In the interest of the people, and I want to give you one example, if you take in Tigrinya, and I'm sorry, Chair, that I normally use that as an example, that's because I have a great knowledge of what's happening there. Now, if you take electricity and water and things in the area of Tigrinya, they no longer allow you to actually register as a subscriber. Or what they want you to do, only the owner of the property has to register and become. Now, for me, that is a problem because, you know, it's common knowledge that most people don't own their own property. And it makes it increasingly difficult for people to be able to get these services, because the insistence is that the owners only can register. Now, let me tell you what the downside of that is. And you know that the law is and the Fire Act comes in here, where you cannot go and cut off services and throw them out overnight. But now when you put it all on the name of the owner himself, and there's a tenancy, what in actual fact happens is, let's assume the tenant is late with his rent. His electricity cannot be cut off. Even if you can't throw him out, you've got to go to the process. But landlords will cut them off. So I want to know, what role can you, would you play in ensuring that we act also in the interest of the people? You know, because, you know, without the people, there's no municipality. Without them, there's no salga. In just to protect our people and ensure that, you know, that this unscrupulous landlords and owners don't take advantage of these loopholes that we have. And how can we change that? I don't have a problem. Ultimately, the owner is responsible for the debt. That has always been the case. So the emphasis on wanting it now to be only on the owner and not the tenant, it puts a lot of strain on the tenant. So I'd like to see if you'd be able to, you know, assist the cause in trying to do it. And then I want you to tell me finally, in terms of salga, in terms of what the president says, in terms of what the minister has said, what are you willing to do differently from now on to make sure that there is compliance in all our municipalities? And lastly, in terms of what we've discovered is, I know we're working on it from a national level at this point in time, in terms of supply chain. If you take the pricing structures, would you at any some stage decide to try and have some standard pricing in the entire in local government itself, so that you find a product in KwaZulu-Natal and in Gauteng? There might not be a major difference because people are ripping off. If you heard what the Chief Justice said recently, it's common knowledge that when you're dealing with the state, the prices are high. And I am saying it should be the other way around, because we are big buyers and we should be getting discounts. And when it comes to issues specifically for service delivery, water, sanitation, electricity, people should make profit, but limited profit. Don't move the state. So I want to know what you could do there to try and limit that. Thank you.
The
Chair. My one is in page 5 on your background. You say lobbying for increased funding for local government. In my view, I would also say, Chair, that local government should get majority of the national budget, because it's where our people is on the ground, and to give them effective services, you need proper resources. But should we lobby for local government to get majority of the funding? How are you going to ensure that accountability for that budget is effective? Because that is what you are struggling with now at the moment. It's the accountability of the little resources that you are having now. So how are you going to ensure, should we get it right to let you get majority of the budget, how are you going to ensure accountability of that resources? Then the second one, Chair, is the underspending. You know, I can't understand what is SAUDA going to do in terms of some municipalities that underspend. And you can clearly see in some instances services are needed, but our people are not getting a proper service. But you still have instances that are municipalities that are underspending, irregular and fraudulent expenditure, and all of those things. You understand, Michael? What are you guys going to do about it as SAUDA? What is your way forward to ensure that these individuals that are committing these acts are taken to account? And then the other one, Chair, is your accounting system. You are saying you are facing challenges with collecting, with credit control and cash flows remains a big challenge. But you are not telling us how you're going to ensure that going forward, what are you going to do as SAUDA? Because, look, you are working in SAUDA. We can't tell you what to do. You need to tell us as to what you're going to do, your way forward, how you're going to improve on collecting your credit controls, cash flows, and all of that. Because in some instances, Chair, in some communities, when we are doing constituency work, we find out that some in the of our communities, we don't get billed. You are not getting billed. So how can you pay something that you don't know how much you are owing? So what is SAUDA going to do in terms of ensuring that proper credit controls, revenue collections, they improve on that? Because you have to ultimately tell us your way forward. I think that is the last, my last one, Chair. I just want, on page 16, there's a bullet point that says refusal to sign service delivery agreement. I just want to find out by the gentleman who is refusing to sign this service delivery agreement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mazopa.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks to SAUDA for the presentation and making us know what the challenge is and what is it that they are doing on those challenges. Like, I want to start with the to get an understanding on the National Collection Agency, because you raised the issue of the credit control policy as a challenge around the issue of implementation. But you said you have started to have a National Collection Agency that you want us to support, that it continues to collect the revenue on behalf of the municipalities. I want to really get an understanding. You need also a legislation that will help you implement the issue of the National Collection Agency. That's what you are requesting, appealing to the committee to say that whilst we are here, we must assist you on that, because we are having a challenge around the issue of the credit control. And also you indicated that ESCOM, they don't want also to sign the contract. You want to be assisted on that. have you ever met with ESCOM as SALCA and deliberate on the challenges that you are having with ESCOM? And also you are indicating that ESCOM does not want you to ESCOM does not want to allow you to, where is that page? Doesn't allow you to put the measures of the cut-off and so on in their area of jurisdiction if the consumers are not paying you. Is it something that you have discussed? Because when you come to other level, you must have exhausted the discussing to say that this is the thinking that SALCA is having, and then hear what the ESCOM is saying, because I don't think really it can be good when you are applying your credit control policy and at the same time there is a place where you can't, you know, do it. And also in the same municipality, you are applying double standard, you know. Other people, when they are not paying, you switch off. In the other areas, you don't do that. Maybe it's something that needs a discussion because the licensing institution is ESCOM in other areas. Around the issue of the electricity. Also, around the issue of SALCA with 27 municipalities that have not paid the ESCOM, I want to understand the role of SALCA. If SALCA behaves like a shop steward, that when a member has committed illegal operations and then you come in, or you are proactive as SALCA to understand that, because there has been a call to say that all the municipalities, they must pay ESCOM so that ESCOM can continue with the generation of the electricity. And the others, as you correctly indicated, the majority of them, they have paid. But we are saying 27 have not paid. What is your role, actually, in the municipalities? Because it talks on the issue of accountability by municipalities to say that when the municipalities, because most of the municipalities were giving that equitable share for poor households to say that they must pay on behalf of those people. And you find that that grant lies there without being taken and pay ESCOM for electricity also, because we once had a presentation from ESCOM indicating the challenges by that time, but we appreciate that now SALCA, you stood up and made the majority of the municipalities pay. But we may prefer for SALCA to be proactive, you know, proactive in a sense that you understand, I know that you play a coordinating role, you understand each and every municipality, what they are doing, you know, so that you prevent to say that there is a big problem around that. And we are coming here also, I have seen here that you said on the deliberations that you had with the stakeholders and the treasury, you ended up getting 95% of you think it's reasonable on the situation we are in now, you know, the downturn of economy. But whilst you talk about the grants and the funding, I want to compare with my colleague. You know, on the budget speech, there was an indication that there is a municipal infrastructure under expenditure in most of the municipalities. It just talks like municipal infrastructure under expenditure. And we are aware as expropriation, standing committee on expropriation, that if there is an under expenditure infrastructure, it's a challenge, because it's one of the stimulus that must boost the growth of the economy. What are you going to do as a local government to make sure that the grants, because as you doing presentation to us, we influence the budget. We made the proposal to say that no, this budget, it's better to go to this particular institution or department. But if they are under expenditure, sometimes it becomes difficult for us, you know, to push. for the people that does not have a capacity to spend. And also there is a challenge. I know that SALGA used to have a school, like training the counselors. But even now in 22 years, there is an indication of the lack of skills in the sphere, but it's the whole government. There is a challenge. But in local government, because it's in the coalface of service delivery, we were of the view that because you were the very early institution that started skills development, that you'll be in a position now not to cry about the skills that will lead to you failing to spend, especially on the basic needs of our community as well as infrastructure that will boost the economy. Maybe if I can have your comment there, colleague. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology for arriving at the place. I'm not feeling well. But I did have an interest to come and listen to this presentation. Thank you very much from SALGA for the presentation. I have some clarity questions that I need to be clarified. The first one is on page 5. The issue of the capacity. You have indicated earlier on that you were lobbying for the increased funding for local government. I have a serious problem. In most of the cases when we interact with the municipalities, we usually get the information that there is no capacity in implementing such and such. And you know, what are you doing as SALGA with regards to that one? Page 12. Or the cost containment measures. In your presentation, you are saying you fully support this, but the municipality needs to have their own municipal regulation on the cost containment measures. If they don't come up with those regulations, it means they can continue as they like, not taking instruction from national government. On page 13, for the issue of capacity, you are also indicating here that additional revenue raising capacity needs to be pursued. I don't know when are we going to stop the issue of capacity in the municipality. On page 14, you have indicated that there is a need to create a legal basis to enable leveraging of equitable share to increase. Can you really expand on that issue? In your presentation, I don't know which page, you have indicated that there are people who are owing municipalities more than 15 billion, if my memory serves me correct. If you can indicate to us, who are these people who are owing municipalities such a exorbitant amount? The last question is on page 16. You have indicated in your presentation that ESCOM is billing some of the municipalities 5 million. Meanwhile, they are only collecting 1.5 million. To me, these numbers are not telling. Can you clarify this? What do you want to say exactly? Thank you very much.
Okay. No further questions. I think that one of our worries about municipalities is, and you have made mention of this, is the issue of illegal connection, which has been going on. Take away a lot of your electricity and no revenue in return. Which it's a matter which we think needs urgent attention, and it has got to be resolved. But it also involves illegal connections of water, involves illegal connections of businesses. Some of those businesses are not registered and so on. It's an additional pressure on the issue we're raising about urban influx. The rural urban. But also the added population from the foreign nationals into the city, and it puts a strain, further strain on your resources of various types. The availability of land, the availability of rented property, overcrowding in that area, health issues arise, and all sorts of other things. So it's a bit of a bigger problem than just simply illegal connection. It's a lot bigger than that. And so we would ask SALCA to have a look at that issue and really assist municipalities to begin to address that challenge a lot more vigorously. And that, of course, is coupled with the question of modern methods of revenue collection. Because as you correctly say, and as all of us know, there is a lot that is expected from municipalities. Yet, the equitable share and the grants, additional grants that go to municipalities in terms of the division of revenue cannot be enough to address all of those problems. So we think that these are matters that needs to be further explored. Perhaps yourselves and the FFC and I say the FFC because I hear you have had engagement with them on another matter you made reference to here, need to have a deeper look into that issue with the purpose of coming up with solutions. Because if, for instance, you apply what you call the local business tax, it says that some legitimate non-businesses oblige with your the, I mean the for instance the bylaws in the municipality, yet there are a lot more other businesses which are not accounted for and therefore are not contributing to this. That's one area. But the second area is we would like to impress upon SALGA and the municipalities to really pay more attention on the question of an enabling environment for SMEs and cooperatives to survive, to be sustainable, to contribute to the revenue of municipalities and contribute to local economic growth. And as you have seen, you have heard the budget speech of the minister and now provided for in the division of revenue bill. More money is being allocated to that Department of Small Enterprise Development. And that Small Enterprise Development should necessarily be a lot more visible in the municipalities where people are. Township economies, informal economies are happening at that level. New businesses and cooperatives have to emerge at that level so that they become part of the local economic development. Part of the pressures arising from intensified urbanization is because people are looking for business, for work opportunities. And the strengthening and the concerted effort of building up this sector and making more sustainable would begin to relieve some of those pressures as well. So, Salka, please respond to members' questions. Yes, Honorable Mashoko.
Maybe so that we understand exactly, because we are at a national government and we have colleagues in provincial government, maybe it will assist to get an information from SALGA whether they are aware how much municipalities are owed by national department, provincial department, and other entities that are working with the national or provincial, and also how is SALGA assisting those municipalities to collect those funds, and also to understand whether SALGA has been monitoring the degree to which municipalities, especially metros, are cutting non-core expenditures around the issue of the cost containment measures, whether they are aware of the municipalities just cutting those things so that a lot of money can go to service delivery. As they were saying, there has been cut in the budget, but also monitor at a local government level to say that the municipalities, especially the metros, they are cutting on those non-core business so that the little resources we have, as they were suggesting, goes to the service delivery, in particular in the basic needs of the people. We want to check, and also the issue of what is the view of SALGA on this, what is the view, or what do they think about the issue that I have raised and also Honorable Manana has raised, the issue of capacity. When do they think that the time that they will say, now the local government is capacitated? Maybe they in the work that they have done with the local government, because I know that they were doing training early. I was one of the teachers training that time. But I want to know, because
NISAL side, there is local SALGAD side doing training, but issue of capacity is always on the priority of challenge. Maybe to understand when they think that they will be have resolved this issue of the capacity at a local level. Okay?
With regards to this 115 billion rand debt that's owed to municipalities, I wonder if at some stage, not necessarily, you can give us a breakdown of which municipality how much. But I wanted to know whether it is possible to have a national revenue collection policy, one policy for the entire country. And I'm going to give an example. I know at Itegwini we used to take 50% and then we used to convert them to prepaid meters, and we found that was not possible. Then we brought it down to pay a minimum of 10% of your debt. And whether you could afford 50 rand a month or 100 rand a month, because if 1 million people pay 50 rand a month, you've got 50 million rand coming in a month. Now, I wonder whether we could not perhaps put a national policy in place so that all municipalities can do the same, but also take into consideration the economic situation and the hardships our people facing. So get them to pay a very small amount in, at least we know the revenue is coming. And then, I think if we could go one step further, all municipalities will know who are the defaulters, you know, when people are running into trouble, you know, often. Should we not have a system where we can identify these people and then help them before they run into too much of trouble, to rather convert them to prepaid meters and things like that, okay? And then have them concurrently paying a small amount towards the debt. So if we can have a system that you can monitor them, it will save them having electricity cut, the reconnection fees are very, very high. You will have less burden on having to pay Eskom and things like that, and then people will be able to control the electricity that they use. So if you could just comment on that, thank you.
There are quite a number of questions and issues raised, and they are all very important and interesting. I will try and attend to all of them, I hope. Where do I start? All right. The performance of local government is a very important issue. It relates to the capacity question that has been asked by honorable members. Now, SALGA has always been clear that building capacity is an ongoing exercise in municipalities. Secondly, we always encounter a reality that with every round of election, you have more than 50% of new councillors coming into the sector. So the cycle has to start all over again. As we are speaking, we are ready, and that's what we're sharing with Treasury, I think sometime next week, on what do we do on day one when we have new councillors. What processes and procedures must be followed? How do we induct them into how municipalities work, but also how do we induct them per portfolio? Depending on the caliber and quality of people we get, could be easier in some instances to build that capacity, may take longer in other instances. Secondly, Treasury shared with us a report that said 6 months before the election, and up until 18 months after election, it's a period of great instability in local government. Yet that's the period when we need to escalate, you know, making sure that new councillors have settled and they have the requisite, you know, understanding, skills and instruments to hit the ground running. So all of these are issues that we are looking at, working with the legislature, working with other partners at COFTA, Treasury, MISA and others to make sure that the requisite skills and instruments are there in local government. But beyond that, we've made a point as well that let's rather focus on creating resilient institutions so that good performance doesn't depend on an individual who may be there today but not be there tomorrow. Whether you change the municipal manager, the CFO, or the mayor, people within the organization need to know what processes and procedures to follow to do their work. So capacity must not only focus at the higher level, it must focus throughout
salvation, and we attend to it, you know, like that. 2 years ago, we launched a program we call the Municipal Audit Support Program. And sitting here, and without preempting what the AG, you know, is going to be presenting when he announces the audit results of municipalities, we've noted over the past 3 years a positive trend of improving audit outcomes, of a reduction in the number of municipalities that are getting disclaimers of whose books is not audited, but also on municipalities that are increasingly getting what the so-called clean audit. That's been that positive trend. But also we've interacted with both the AG's office and SEPFA to say, is there any correlation between clean audit or unqualified audit and service delivery? And the recent report from SEPFA seems to be pointing that there is indeed, you know, effective use of resources and, you know, performance, better performance in those causes. But another exciting development, you know, raised by the Auditor General Chair is that whereas in the previous financial year, you had about 28% of municipalities implementing what is called consequences management. The last financial year, the AG said 50% of municipalities have got clear consequence management arrangements. You incur fruitless expenditure, there's a process to be followed to deal with those things. You know, but it's not our thing, that the AG. And through our intervention in these municipalities, we've been encouraging, you know, both the political leadership and the administrative leadership, you know, to use those instruments to make sure that there's clear accountability and so on. The issue of writing up of debt around ESCOM issues, it is a complex one. Some municipalities have done it and then it's done all over again. There's basically two provinces in the main that seem to have this as a major problem. The first state in Mpumalanga. One. Two, we've been talking to a number of parties, NERSA, ESCOM. We've had more than 5 meetings with ESCOM. Not only at the national level, but we've been meeting with ESCOM in all provinces, meeting also the 27 municipalities. And members would remember that initially we had 60 municipalities that were defaulting. We met with all those municipalities alongside Treasury, went through their documents, why are they defaulting, why are they not paying, and so on. And through such an intervention, that list was reduced for about 27. We've had more than, as I'm saying, 3 workshops of discussion with ESCOM on their issues at the national level and in provinces. And we've raised the issues that were raised here. We've raised them with NERSA, we've raised them with Treasury, COGTA, and the Department of Public Enterprises. The recent exercise that we're doing, I think our colleagues are in Mpumalanga today, if I'm not mistaken, you know, has been led by COGTA, you know, Treasury, Sadesh, Public Enterprises, and FALDA, to visit all provinces, meet provincial treasuries, provincial COGTAs, the affected municipalities, get to the bottom of their situation, and understand why, when they had previously signed undertakings to pay, are they not paying. There's been a number of reasons. For example, the example that I gave, the municipality has consumed electricity.
saying. But secondly, we can't enforce your credit control responses because we have no legal basis. Let me give you an example. The 16 municipalities who the triple share was in court held are said to be owing Eskom about 4.2 billion. Let's say, for argument's sake, it's fine. We accept. But Soweto alone owes Eskom 8.2 billion. Just one township. 8.2 billion. And there's no catching in Soweto, no withholding of the money to Jonas Pick and so on. Where Eskom provides electricity, people will tend to go and pay Eskom, for argument's sake. They pay Eskom, but they don't pay municipal rate for water, sewer, and other things, refuse collection. And when we say Eskom, cut them off, because electricity is the only instrument that we can use to compel them. You can't cut them out of water. Eskom says, but they paid me. So on what basis do I cut their electricity? And we're saying, let's have a discussion around that. And find a mutually acceptable, you know, arrangement. The for reduction in the equitable share, members would remember that the setup of our country is such that there are areas who on their own do not have own generated revenue. They entirely depend on transfers, be it in the form of a triple share or grant. Now, immediately then you reduce that. It raises questions, one about their projected plan, if they have some, they have to revise those plans. Because the initial indicatives said we'll give you 10 rand, now we're giving you 8 rand, so change whatever projection. You may have to cut on certain things that you said you were to do. But even in those cuts, for instance, the initial proposal was that let's reduce what we allocate to all these projects by 10%. And after a number of discussions at the budget forum between ourselves, Treasurer and others, we agreed to go to cap it at 95%. So we say, yes, taking us somewhere, it could have been better, but you will have an impact, you know, on small news projects. Hence then we said, rather provide more certainty and guarantees to poor news projects. Metro, and this discussion was led by Metro Mayor, we're willing to sacrifice and pledge more, you know, to bail out smaller municipalities because they can generate their own revenue. And that was the argument. But that was overtaken by developments and, you know, we will look at it going forward. The court ruling, it arose, I think, in the case of the court ruling, it talks to section 118 of the Systems Act. The example exactly you're giving, that the owner of the property is liable. So even if I sell your chair my house, if I owe something, you have to pay, you know. When municipalities have looked at this, for instance, the city of Johannesburg has said, in transferring a house, we look at those things. Because it's an unfair arrangement of punishing the new owner when the debt was incurred by the previous owner. So why not look at this thing holistically, but in issuing out clearance at this case, we make sure that all debts are dealt with. It's outside the law, you know, but that's the practice within the federal aspect. It's one issue that we've raised with COFTA. We've said we need some legislative amendments. That's what we're proposing to COFTA, and that's what we're going to bring to the various committees of parliament on that particular item. But also, we are having a meeting, there's a special discussion, I'm not sure whether this week or next week, amongst all the networks, the CFOs, Krishkuma in Devon will be there and others, you know, where this is one topic that we're discussing, you know, how to go about this, what are the lessons, and what, you know, municipalities should be doing. I've alluded to the issue of compliance, that the increasing trend in audit outcomes, you know, indicates that, or improvement, indicates that municipalities are complying in a number of respects. Because the audit usually looks at three issues. It looks at performance on predetermined, you know, objectives, that is, performance issues. You say they're going to deliver 100 houses. Have you delivered those? They're going to build 10 kilometers of cut
currently an ongoing discussion between, you know, ourselves as SALGA and the office of the chief procurement officer to say there are these supply chain reforms happening at the other two spheres. How do we bring local government on board? But what are the specific issues, you know, that relate to local government? But also, how do we make sure that local government is part of the broad database, you know, of vendors, so that there's some regulation and standardization, you know, of prices and so on. One thing that we are also raising, you know, which relates to the question that was asked around the municipalities not being able to spend. Sometimes, yes, it's a capacity issue, but I'll come back to that. But sometimes we pick it up that because of whatever reason, at the local level, you have a tender out to build 100 houses, and one of the losing bidders takes the matter to court. The project, when they are found for it, ends up being delayed for 3 years or 4 years until the court has resolved that. We've said to Treasury, what instruments then can we make sure that we don't frustrate projects happening? Because people may not be interested in those technicalities. They will say you didn't build houses. And it therefore affects, you know, service delivery and, you know, other projections by municipalities. We have alluded, Honorable Member Lowe, on to the issue of accountability, that as we low before into funding of local government, we made this point last time around, that if you look at national government, provincial government, and local government has been getting only about 9%, you know, of the total budget. And we say that's not, you know, adequate, that's not enough. You know, we think more needs to be dedicated to this year for services in particular. But also we've been saying to all municipalities, accountability is very important. Hence, one of the important instruments that we think Parliament must work with are the MPEC committees, Municipal Public Accounts Committees. We have raised some challenges around these committees, the capacity, the resources, the what happens to their reports, you know, the issue of politics, you know, the legal framework for the work of MPEC and so on, and how, you know, consequences are being managed, you know, through oversight arrangements in local government. We have raised those issues. And naturally, we've said we want a balance, and that's what we say in the presentation, that with our lobbying for more revenue, we are saying to members, it must come with more accountability and effective, you know, spending of those the thing, resources that we look for. But again, if municipalities understand or misspend, you know, through what, fraudulent practices, through unauthorized or irregular expenditure and so on, we've said upfront as well that we fully support the financial misconduct regulation that we introduced by the SALGA. There must be action and consequence, you know, where there is, you know, breach of regulations, you know, agreed upon. And that's what we're saying to municipal managers, that's what we're saying to the leadership in various municipalities. The debt owed to municipalities, the 115 billion, and it keeps on escalating. We did a study on the billing systems of municipalities. Well, what are the issues? What are the lessons that we've learned over the past? Why are people not paying? What municipalities could do? Is it a systems issue, or is it a broad value chain issue around how we interact with, you know, clients as municipalities? You know, one. But two, we've looked at contextual issues. You know, people may require electricity as a resource for development and other activities, but they may not be in a position to pay. Hence, electricity theft, hence, you know, a number of other things. So you will find three categories of defaulters. It's households, you know, it's businesses, and it's government. Now, we've been working through the state system to deal with some of these issues. We did lobby successfully, you know, as well that some action, at least at the government level, certainly must be taken.
and we were glad to, by the Treasury to the RPG, sent out a letter to all provincial MSCs and to all premiers that they must pay. All state entities must pay. Two, the matter was discussed in cabinet and agreed upon, you know, that all departments, at least by November last year, should have paid at least 80% of their debt, you know, to municipalities. If there are other issues, dispute about invoices and so on, those could be negotiated afterwards. And as far as we've been involved with public works, in going around the country, going to each municipality to say, these are your invoices, can we look at them, let's clean them up, but also public works is paying. And a number of municipalities have since been paid by public works. You know, not all of them yet, but at least government has begun that arrangement to the thing. We've said to municipalities, there's no reason why business shouldn't be paying. Look at clean up your invoices, follow through, implement your credit control policies. We've even said maybe it's an issue that we need to pilot through legislation. That, for example, before you do business in a municipality, you must, or before you apply or what, submit a tender, you must have a valid tax certificate. Right? Now, without that, you can't transact with a municipality. We've raised a question that says, shouldn't we include another element that says, as a business, submit a valid rate certificate from a municipality? Because why should you be owing municipality 30,000 and still want to get a tender from that municipality? So if your account is not clean as a business, then you are ruling yourself out from, you know, submitting. It's an issue that needs discussion, but you are hoping that it's one of the things. With regards to households, again, we are raising another legal instrument. There is a requirement that some municipalities are not enforcing, that you can't be a councillor, you can't be a municipal official and operate in a municipality. And our question as Falga has been, shouldn't we extend this to all state employees? If you work for national government, you stay in a municipality, you get paid by the state, why are you not paying your account? So those are some of the arguments that we're making to clean up the debt, but we are having a balance, you know, focus as well, to say municipalities also clean up your practices. You know, send right bills at the right time to the right person, but also be responsive for how you deal with your thing, your various clients, and so on. So that's the issue here. The National Collection Agency, we did some study and we found that they have this kind of an agency in France that collects on behalf of, you know, all municipalities. Whether it's a model that can follow here is something else that needs to be explored. We've been talking to SARS, and actually we're meeting with them next Monday, to say they have a database that municipalities don't have. I could be indigent in one municipality in Polokwane or in a rural village in KZN, but be able to pay a category. You know, but also I have other accounts that I'm servicing, but I'm not paying the municipality. And SARS would have that information. So we're having that exploratory discussion with them, whether we can have one database, you know, that is shared between municipalities and the revenue services. And if we were to have that one database, how would it work? And what are the issues that need to be part of it? And what, if any, legal or regulatory requirements, you know, need to be considered. So that's what we are saying. I've spoken to the ESCOM issues on the FDA and so on. We've met them a number of times, I've said. I've also indicated that our role, you know, amongst the 27 municipalities has been to meet with them, find out what their issues, assist them where it is necessary, you know, deploy requisite capacity. Some folks don't even have an electrical engineer. They don't know their electricity demand. You know, they can't, you know, attend to issues of their infrastructure, the sillage or the thing, and so on. And we've been saying that much as they have to pay us from, you know, but we need to attend to those technical issues, policy issues, and agreement, you know, issues between them and ESCOM around those. So they're practically involved in their situation. The
how local government is structured is first budget, unless the particular item has been just presented and adopted by council. You know, it's only a recommendation. It doesn't have any binding legal effect. You know, those are circulars. But a regulation, like treasury regulation, is something different. It carries legal weight. It's something that has to be complied with. So that's why we're talking about moving from a circular perhaps to, you know, regulation, you know, to attend to the issue of cost containment. But as I've said, we've said up front, we encourage municipalities to look at this, you know, once they are published. Treasurer has said 6 days, 7 days after the budget, you will issue those circulars and regulations. We still need to see them, comment on them as well, and see what they entail. But it's something that we've said we would recommend for our members to seriously consider and adopt it in their councils when they adopt their budget for the next financial year. The technicality around equitable share is that some municipalities don't have a balance sheet that they can use to go to the market and say, we have this asset, and therefore we are raising, you know, a bond, or we're raising capital, and so on. And we said then, in the absence of those, what other instruments do they have? We said, it's the equitable share. Of course, there are laws regulating, you know, what could be used for the equitable share. And hence, we're making a point that shouldn't we discuss this treasury? Shouldn't we look at the division of revenue, you know, and also understand what are the implications, what are the risks, you know, for using equitable share to leverage, you know, the market or to raise, you know. It's just one suggestion. The discussion on the pooled funding is at an advanced stage. Understand as we're speaking today, colleagues are meeting in Gauteng to say 1, 2, 3 steps need to be followed to take this discussion forward. So we're working with the Food of Johannesburg, in particular Gauteng province treasury, you know, to some of the donor agencies to look at some international models and what could be done, you know, to enable municipalities to raise money. We picked it up somehow, Chair, which might be of interest to the committee. When you interact with the Development Bank of South Africa, DBSA, that in a number of instances, DBSA charges more than commercial banks. Yet they are a DFI, Development Finance Institution, and we had hoped that we may not have to create other instruments that where municipalities would go to raise, you know, capital for infrastructure. It's an issue. Yes, there are certain reasons. There's some history why DBSA does that. But I think it is an issue that does need to be discussed. And as far as we're going to be raising that with the Development Bank when we meet with them to raise that concern or to just get an explanation of why he is there, that kind of a thing. The metros, the budget speech does allude to some of the work that is happening at the metro level, and some of the issues emanating from the metros are more complex. You know, how to structure a bond, you know, how to leverage financial markets, you know, how to do long-term planning, you know, futuristic planning and foresighting and all those things. We've looked at this as a particular platform as well. Next week, Tuesday, the 8th, again, we're meeting in Devon with all the CFOs to say what specific support do you think SALGA should give to metros? Because it can't be just generic, you know. It has to be at another level, some more sophistication. Could be that we need to bring in external skills, you know, to the organization. But we're having that conversation with metros to say what specific focus. Could it be around legislative issues? Could it be around balance sheet analysis? Could it be around structuring bonds and other, you know, instruments? Could it be around innovative, you know, arrangements that we pick up from other countries and all of that, you know, so that they have all those modern methods, Chair, that you've alluded to in managing their affairs and in generating revenue for service delivery and so on. Yes, we are talking to the FSC on a number of issues. You know, I've said that we have developed with them their report on the costing of basic services, you know, and it does indicate that municipalities are underfunded in the current formula. NME Environment Chair, you've covered that. We had a conference in Bloemfontein late last year, I think it was in October 24th, to discuss what could we do as the organization and the sector to focus on small towns regeneration. Could be mining towns, could be tourism towns, could be border towns, could be some of the towns that previously Bantustan capitals and so on. You know, we came up with a number of recommendations from that, and we have colleagues that are following up on some of these issues, you know, and that relates to working with SMMEs, you know, revitalizing township economies. We are looking at the example in Gauteng with keen interest to see whether that can be spread, you know, to Khayelitsha, to Umlazi, to Mdanzani, and other places. And we are encouraging municipalities to learn, you know, from each other and see how, you know, small enterprises could be the thing. It goes with some of the requirements or some of the issues that were raising around the procurement reform at local government level. For instance, you could have small innovators, you know, and that's how innovation works. You can't say, let's go and tender and do this and that. You know, you kill that spirit and creativity if you follow all some of these processes. But without violating law, it's some of the issues that, for instance, we've been debating with a couple of municipalities in Katunze, as an example, the Tekwini and the Ikoruleni and Chwane. So let's have this discussion initially, so that when we interact with Treasury, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we carry the voice, you know, from some of our members around some of the initiatives that could be taken. The last one is around cutting non-core expenditure. It goes with the cost containment measures. There's a number of practical issues, you know, that were presented at the budget forum where some savings could be made, but the minister did raise a challenge with SALDA to say what more could be done. SALDA must make proposals. That's why I was saying, Chair, that we want to interact with Treasury in the crafting of the circular regulation to say municipalities must consider, you know, these items without necessarily micromanaging, you know, municipalities or being ridiculous, you know, about it. The new collection policy is something on for me that could be explored so that there's some standardization. But also we may seek to understand dynamics, you know, that could arise, you know, from that. But certainly it's something that we're worth considering. The main issue, however, may not necessarily be policies, members. It could be around implementation. We've said to municipalities, look at your credit control. The city of Chwane had an issue with government not paying. They threatened to cut, you know, on a particular date, and within no time, they were paid. And we've said to municipalities, why then not enforce, you know, your own policies? Why play politics around straightforward administrative matters and so on? We are having a nice discussion with ESCOM, you know, around some of innovative instruments that could be, you know, leveraged to manage electricity issues. You know, prepaid meters have been one such an example. It's quite a sensitive political issue. It may not be always possible, you know, to put this. Soweto has proven that, you know, but some of these prepaid, you know, technologies are working well in China. You know, and they don't deal only with electricity, they deal also with water and other services that municipalities, you know. For example, if you owe a municipality for refuels, for rates, for whatever, you know, you can't buy electricity until you've paid a certain portion towards that. And we're saying if it's working well and so on, why don't you then explore, you know, whether it could be the same. But as I'm saying, it's quite a politically sensitive issue. You would find resistance in certain instances and people removing some of the meters and so on. And so we have that kind of a situation for the discussion that we're having with ESCOM and other service providers. Thanks very much, Chair. If there's something that I didn't cover, members would remain.
Okay. Treasury?
Thank you very
much. I would just like to raise a few things to just add to what Saga said, and actually just also add a bit more information. The issue about Nurse's announcement yesterday, we're fully aware of that, and it will be considered as part of the 2016 adjustment budget process. So that was one of the issues raised. Another issue that was raised, and it's also important for the committee to notice, that the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant has been a grant that has been in existence for quite a number of years, and it was specifically put in place to build capacity, but it didn't really have the impact that it was required to do and really build the capacity of the municipalities required. So the grant has been restructured to a large extent, where the support will not be directly linked also to the municipal infrastructure support agency, for example, to support municipalities to actually access and actually spend the infrastructure grant money. And there's also other reforms that got to do, for example, with assisting municipalities with billing and the like. So it's a different approach, and hopefully over time we will see the value of that. With regard to the concern raised that the municipal scala will not be funded anymore, it's always been funded through two grants, and it will still be funded through the financial management grant. So at least that concern is alleviated. Then there's lots of policy issues that Paul has raised, and they've also pointed out that there's quite a lot of collaboration taking place. A lot of those issues we're jointly looking at from National Treasury side, SALGO, DECOC, and the FSC as a collaboration, and we report back to the Budget Forum, which is chaired by the Minister of Finance, and also SALGO is also part of that committee and the MECs as well. Then also just for the committee to note, the conditional grant money and the equitable shares is funded through what we call the Division of Revenue Bill. But there's also other legislation that's important for the committee to note. SALGO made a presentation, a lot of issues related to municipal borrowing and the bonds and the like. The legislation that regulates that is the Municipal Finance Management Act. Currently National Treasury is busy with the process of looking at the municipal borrowing policy to strengthen it, and that is also quite important to note. Then with regard to any new taxation that the municipality wants to introduce, it must be done through what we call the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act. So a municipality cannot just introduce a new municipal owned tax. It needs to be done through the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act. And I think what is quite important for this committee to note is that that legislation goes through the finance committees. So most probably what could be quite useful, given that this committee has got quite a quick interest in local government, that a joint sharing arrangement or consideration process possibly be considered. Salga would be happy to hear that the March 2016 local government equitable share will not be withheld. But also for the committee to note that Eskom was really taking legal action against some of the defaulting municipalities to get payments in place. With regard to the division of revenue and the local government equitable share being used for municipal borrowing and leveraging thereof, it does not require changes to the MFMA, neither does it require consideration through the division of revenue, because it's an unconditional grant, but there's bigger considerations, and it's important that we work also with SALGO, because in the end affordability is very important, because municipalities will need to be able to repay the loans and the costs related to that. So what is quite important is that in municipal borrowing we do differentiation between larger municipalities and also smaller municipalities and look at appropriate solutions in terms of municipal borrowing. And then just the last point, SALGO made the proposal that the cost of basic services is in key in informing future allocations and revisions to the local government equitable share, and that principle is agreed to, but of course it's also subject to the national budget process and affordability. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we... done with this part of our meeting, we can release Salka so that we can address the minutes. We have four sets of minutes from the previous meetings which we need to adopt. The 16th of February, the 17th, 25th, and 26th. Thank you very much. Members, let's take the 16th of February, the first page. Second page. Page 3. Page 4. On page 1, yes. Sorry? On your mic.
Sorry to take it back. On page 1, Nyalunga is indicated as the person who was present.
Oh, yes. I think we must correct that. All right. With that amendment, somebody move for adoption. Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Seconder. Honorable Madopa. Thank you. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. The seconders. You apologize. Yes. So, under apologies. All right, let's correct that.
Any issue of Nyalunga?
Nyalunga was also, yes, we received an apology as well. So she should be under apologies. With second page, page 3. It was a joint meeting, Honorable Sheikh Imam, so there were other committees involved in the discussion. Finance was there, NCOP, Senior Committees were there,
what we should do, just so that we reflect, yes, it does say members of the Standing Committee on Finance and Select Committees on Appropriation and Finance were also present. Yes, so it's committees. Page 4. Move up for adoption. Honorable Manana, seconder. Honorable Madoba, thank you. The 25th. Again, it was the joint briefing of the Standing and Select Committees on Appropriation and Finance.
shouldn't be under present, yes. Yes, Honorable Mato.
I'm not sure, Honorable Chair. I think this one is for Friday, where they refused to be part of the meeting. Was it an apology or was it a boycott of the meeting?
No, there was a direct apology from Matthew Glenn.
Yes, Matthew Glenn. It was a
one was present was
Fig.
Was a Fig and
my
Menir.
Yes, Menir.
I think that we
was it an apology? We want to check. Was it an apology?
And then yes.
No.
What I think we need to correct is to include Honorable Mene.
Yeah.
Under DA.
Yeah. And Chair, it's just a concern because when they go with the document, but they say they don't want the information. They come and steal the document and go out. You know, it's not correct that they must take the information of the meeting that they said they don't want it to continue. I think you must send the police to collect it.
No, Chair, I don't think that should be taken as a joke because it's not a joke. Any member of parliament is entitled to take any document that he or she is needed. I'm not defending the DA because tomorrow the same example will be made to me. It's a very incorrect statement to make that, to say, members of parliament, if you don't want to be part of particular proceedings, you are not entitled to that document. Then, Chair, I'll just have to check because I know I did send an apology or requested my PA to send a apology for this particular meeting. But I don't think we should entertain things of if a member decides to walk out, they mustn't take documents.
I was not finished. I don't know whether. No. You just.
Yes.
Thank you. No, I'm saying this, Honorable Chair, on a serious note. They said it's illegal to get an information before that time. Because presentation and it's about information, you know. Because I agree with the colleague to say that in the normal circumstances, when you have a document, but when you boycott that meeting, you say if you are not supposed to get an information at this time from those stakeholders, you know, but at the same time you take the documentation. It's a difference to what the colleague is saying, to say we are in the meeting, maybe we are going out, we are not contesting the information that is being given in this particular meeting, to say it is wrong to get that information. But at the same time, you take the information, you go out. You know, that's what I'm asking, whether is it correct? Because if you say you don't want this information, you know, in that meeting, it's wrong to get it. That information at that time, it must be received later, but you take it. You know, because it's an information. The chair was saying, you know, it's just an information that will be getting here in the meeting, but they said it's wrong for those presentations, but they take it. I'm just asking whether maybe the advice, whether it's correct. I understand what my colleague is saying is correct if we are in the meeting, but if we are saying it's wrong, you're not supposed to get this information at this time. You must get it later, but you take it at the same time. Then.
Yeah, the challenge is that, that parliament or committees can't withhold information from members. Whether they accept that information, whether they describe it as illegal or not, you can't do that. Besides, the information is always emailed to members, and they will have it anyway, so you don't have any control over that. That's one. But the second issue, I think, Honorable Law, you were not in the meeting, but one of your members was there. I think we should record his name. I can't recall who. That was a was it? No, it wasn't that. No, it.
Costa. Instead from the last two names. The last three names.
Oh, yeah, Jenkins.
Yes.
Okay. The other one was who?
Was it the same guy?
Where?
The one, the last year one.
It was the same advocate general. Yes. Remember when we were meeting at 2-7? He was there. Thank you, members. The meeting stands adjourned.